There we go. Good morning, everybody. Lovely to have the share back. We'll begin with singing Psalm 121, page 510. We want peace. It did not come via the channels of Pakistan or other channels. In this volatile time for the world and volatile time for Israel and everybody feeling it in one way or another, we will sing together Psalm 121 on page 510. Shelam alos esa enai el hehorim me'ayin yavo Ezri Ezri me'im Adonai Ose shomayim va'oretz al yitein lamot raglecha al yanum shomerecha hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shome Yisrael Adonai shomerecha Adonai tzilcha al yad yeminecha Yomom ha-shemesh lo yakecha ve-yareach ba-layla Adonai yishmarecha mikol ra yishmar es nafshecha Adonai yishmar tzeischa uvoecha me'ata ve'ad olam. So has anybody got any yacht sites either in the coming week or coming up? No. I'll tell you who we are going to mention, and Wednesday in Skamarshire also, it's Leonie Lewis's yacht sites coming up this week. Yeah. So we're going to dedicate an Ishmael Rochel Bas Aharon. And also, while I've got, I might as well mention today's yacht sites, we're going to learn Le'iloi Nishmos Rabbi Yisrael Ben Leib and Ha'isha Hinda Malka Bas Ephraim. So we are returning to our investigation of the Amidah. The bracha that we're now up to is on page 86, the second paragraph. Now, it appears at first glance that this bracha seems to be a departure from how the others have worked. Because the others, in one way or another, have been about blessings for all of us, whether we're saying God heal us all, allow us to repent, bless us with prosperity. This bracha seems to be interested in five particular groups. So, surely, even when we say we want a restoration of justice, previously, justice for all, right? Why is it seemingly that we are asking blessing for five particular groups as opposed to everybody? It seems that way. You can hear I'm using the word seemingly, so actually in the end it is for us all, but then if it's for us all, then why are you focusing just on this particular group, that particular group, etc. Okay? So before we get into the biblical basis for this bracha, let's look at who are these groups that seem worthy of a particular blessing, which at first glance seems to suggest they get a particular bracha, whereas the rest of us don't. Right. So page 86, second bracha. The first group, Al Hatzadikim, the righteous. Okay, the righteous we're mentioning specifically, so they are being given particular focus for blessing. Who's the second group? The Al Hachasidim. Now, we don't necessarily mean what we normally call Chasidim, as in, you know, with the ringlets and the Charedim and, you know, follow the Baal Shem Tov, and there's all the different groups, whether it's Lubavitch or Vishnitz or Bobov or, you know, Satmar or whoever it is that took the name Chasidim. Let's just go with the translation, the pious. So it seems that the righteous need a particular brocha, the pious need a particular brocha. Who is the next group? We call them Zakenim. Or when you put it into the construct, meaning the elders of, it's Ziknei Amcha, the elders of your people. V'al Ziknei Amcha Beis Yisrael, the elders of your people, the house of Israel. So a particular bracha for righteous people, particular bracha for, let's call them pious people. We need to unpack what that means. Particular bracha for elders. Is that an age thing? We'll have to see. A particular bracha for al pleitas sofrehem, for the remnants of their scholars. It translates in the... Hello, good morning. Where are you just getting started? You getting fine? Yeah. Remnants of their scholars. Who do we mean by remnants, and which scholars are we talking about? You right over there? We've got over here if you need. Yeah, or you got over there? Good, lovely. Okay. And then the fifth group, the al geire hatzedek, which are righteous converts. Yeah. Well, actually, it literally means stranger, but we use the expression ager to talk about somebody because they started off as a stranger. They came from outside, and now they're part of us. We tend to call them ager tzedek, a righteous convert. Okay. Although, interestingly enough, you may or may not be aware, I'm sure you are, that once somebody does become Jewish, we're not supposed to kind of remind them of the fact that once upon a time they were from outside. Yeah, they're now one of us. So the obvious question is, why are we giving a particular bracha to these five categories? So first of all, what do we mean by righteous? Yeah, good question. Because there's a famous verse, we quote it a lot. Sadly, we quote it a lot at Shiva House, where we pray for the person whose soul has been taken from this world. And we say, Ki ein sadik ba'aretz. That's a quote from the book of Ecclesiastes, which says, for in this world there's no such thing as a tzaddik. Well, if there's no such thing as a tzaddik, then how can you talk about a tzaddik? No, it's a qualification. You've got to have a proper understanding of a tzaddik. If you think a tzaddik means they don't do wrong, because tzaddik means doing what is right. There's one obvious problem with that. We're human beings. We're fallible. And that whole verse says, Ki ein tzaddik ba'aretz. There is something called a tzaddik, but who does not do wrong. So you can still be a tzaddik and do wrong. I thought a tzaddik was a person who doesn't do wrong. Right? So how can you... What is it allows you to still be a tzaddik even though you make mistakes? So we need to understand what a tzaddik is. Because if we think it's tzaddik, no, they get it right. I'm just a humble, normal person. They're on a lofty level. No. Ki ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yachtah. There is no such thing as a tzaddik who does only good and never does wrong. Oh, okay, that's a relief. Am I a tzaddik then? Don't know, because I've got lots of mistakes, you know. So what is it that makes you a tzaddik if you... No. So in order to understand that, we need to look at who does the Torah call a tzaddik? Actually, strictly speaking, the Torah doesn't call him a tzaddik, but he's known throughout Jewish literature, rabbinic literature, and the Jewish conscience as a tzaddik. He's got that title. Just like, say again? Funny enough, no, he's Solomon the Wise, right? So Solomon's known as the Wise. Moshe is the ultimate teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu. Avraham is Avraham Avinu. Who is known as the tzaddik? Joseph. Joseph is called Yosef HaTzaddik. Okay. So you could say, okay, he did lots of things wrong. I mean, no disrespect. You know, in fact, at the beginning of the story, he's actually quite a vain, full of himself young man at the beginning of the story. You know, there's fracture going on in his family because of him, and he seems all right with it. So he's the tzaddik? What is it? Don't get me wrong. They're all great people. It's the Bible. We cannot compare ourselves, right? But if you were to say, guesses that... Okay, I mean, he did some great things. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not taking away, you know, his level of responsibility in Egypt. But sad, I mean, why should he get that title above other great biblical characters? So we're going to look at a very famous episode with Joseph that might help us... Actually, a few episodes. We're going to start with a very famous one. Which is, where is it? Let's have a look. Page 215. And we remember the story of Joseph, of course, and his brothers sell him, and even though it's terrible, horrific, they have to do teshuva for it, you know, but he wasn't totally blameless. Certainly that shouldn't have happened to him, don't get me wrong. But, you know, relationships had become fractured in the family and he was a factor in that. Obviously, what they did was completely beyond the pale. And, of course, as a result of being sold as a slave to Egypt, who does he work for? Potiphar. And Potiphar can see that this young man is actually very, very capable. And after a while, he puts him in charge of his whole household. He trusts him implicitly. And, of course, who takes a shine to Joseph, putting it mildly? Potiphar's wife. So we're going to pick up the text on page 215, which is Genesis chapter 30. I'm just making sure. Yes, good, I've got the recording going. Hello to all those who can't make it today, but enjoy the recording. Okay, so we see that Joseph's very trusted by Potiphar, very capable, responsible. If we just pick up from verse 6, Posuk Vav, of chapter 39 in Genesis, verse 6, that's page 2 and 5. So it's talking about Potiphar, and he says, Vayazov kol asher lo biyad Yosef. Potiphar had such trust in Joseph, he left all that he had, literally in the hand of Joseph. In Joseph's custody, it translates, it's a good translation. In Joseph's charge. Velo yada ito ma'uma. And, you know, as far as Potiphar was concerned, there was nothing lacking in Joseph. He was trustworthy, and he could be trusted to only deal with these things that he was entitled to have, not the things he wasn't entitled to have. So the way it says, so in other words, nothing except for the bread that he ate. Only what he was allowed to have in terms of what his food was he able to take for himself. Everything else he looked after properly, his master's property. Okay. But then we're told, Vayhi Yosef Yifei Soav Yifei Ma'er. But Joseph was handsome of form and handsome of appearance. So even though he's behaving correctly, seemingly, we're actually going to see an interesting, I don't know whether he brings it down it does actually, it brings down the Midrash from Rashi, right? There's also almost a returning to a bit of form here with Joseph, that as great as he was and responsible as he was and trustworthy as he was, just like he'd been a bit full of himself in his youth in terms of his appearance and curling his hair and all that kind of thing, there seems to be this suggestion that he starts to go back to that kind of vain behaviour, which is what draws him to the attention to Potiphar's wife. And in fact, this is quoted in the commentary. So if you just look in the small writing underneath, so you got the third paragraph begins with 7 to 20, Potiphar's wife slanders Joseph. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. Joseph spent a year in Potiphar's service. As verse 6 states, Joseph was exceedingly handsome, which in the plain sense sets the stage for the lust of Potiphar's wife. But as Rashi notes on the Midrash, once he became a success in his master's home, Joseph became preoccupied with his appearance and began to curl his hair. You could say, well, come on, okay, he wants to look good. I mean, he wasn't doing it to attract the attention of Potiphar's wife. So can he really be held so responsible for that? But it appears that the Midrash is putting a certain degree of responsibility. In other words, yes, he was giving most of his time and attention to his master's requirements, but there was also a bit of, he might not have been taking for himself items or exploiting anything that belonged to his master, but the fact that he was in a position of prominence maybe went to his head a little bit. Yeah. And so God said, your father is mourning and you curl your hair, I will incite the bear, meaning Potiphar's wife, against you. So even if you think that's a bit harsh on Joseph, again, it doesn't quite fit with this. He's such a tzaddik. He's not interested in how wonderful he looks or anything like that. Yeah. What it shows, which is the point here, is that he's human. So however great he seemed to be, even when he was in a bad situation, he made good of it. Right? He's a slave, but he shows such hard work and such trustworthiness. Potiphar gives him an unusual amount of responsibility for somebody who's in service. We'll see the same thing happens in prison. When he ends up in prison after this, he becomes so trustworthy and so competent that he's put in charge of other prisoners. That's how the butler and the baker come to him. You know, fine. So he's definitely a man who's successful, but, and this is the point, he's also a man who's flawed. And this is the point. Ki ein tzaddik ba'aretz, right? The whole point about being a tzaddik is not that you're perfect, because nobody's perfect. How can you still be a tzaddik despite the fact that you're not perfect? And then it says as follows. Posuk Zion, verse 7. Vayhi acha hadvarim ha'ele. And after these things, vatisa eishes adonar veseinah el Yosef, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. Vatoma shichva imi. And she said, I want you to lie with me. Now, I love the Art Scroll translation, which is using a fair amount of license, in my humble opinion, because the word vayma'ein literally means, but he refused. But he refused, right? It doesn't say vayma'ein ma'od, which would mean a lot, abundantly, greatly, just as he refused, right? And you get very good. I mean, think about it. For a year, this woman will not let him be, but he refuses. However, if you look very carefully on this word vayma'ein, can you see there's a squiggly line above the aleph? Can you see that? Look at the word vayma'ein. You'll see it. A squiggly line. Can you see that squiggly line? Mm-hmm. That squiggly line occurs four times in the Torah. And it's a musical note called a shalshelet. Okay? And interesting enough, you can hear in the shalshelet the root shalosh, which is number three. And if you look at number three, it goes that way, that way, that way. You know what I mean? The line goes over this way, and then that way, and this way, and that way. Which is why it's the same word for a chain, because chains interlock, where the interlocking parts go this way, this way, this way, this way. Why have we got this shalshelet on this word vayma'ein? Because although the text, the conclusion of what happens with Joseph is he refused, but he went through a whole journey before he refused. And if you listen to the music, it goes back and forth, back and forth. Should I, shouldn't I, should I, should... Well, if you're such a tzaddik, there shouldn't have even been a should I. It should have always been shouldn't I, shouldn't it? Yeah. So, the Midrash gives a very interesting elaboration on this battling with himself. At those moments that he might not overcome his temptations, it says he saw his father. Oh, very good. You know, in those moments, he thought, oh, if I misbehave, you know. But then if daddy's watching, I'll behave myself. So he asks an obvious question. Who's going to misbehave if daddy's watching? Is that such a big deal? Right? So the answer is, but where did that vision come from? He mustered up the image of his father. Right? But the interesting thing about all of this is that ultimately, what is it that motivates him to think of his dad? I love my dad, what would dad think? Yeah, there's something more than that. And the clue is in the coming verses. Because after, like, we just pick up from verse 8, Vayma'ein, where despite Rabbi Artzkel saying he adamantly refused, well, he went through a journey before he refused. That's what the shalshelet's there to tell you, right? But he refused, you know. And what does he say? Vayomer el Eishes Sadonav, he said to his master's wife, Hein Adoni lo yada iti ma babais. Look, with me here, my master concerns himself about nothing in the house, meaning he puts everything in my charge. Lo yada iti ma babais. Whatever he has in the house, v'chol asher yesh lo nasambedi, he's put in my hand. Well, he translates here, he's placed in my custody. Einenu gadol babayis hazeh mimen. There's no one greater in his house than I. V'lo chasach mimeni me'uma. And he has not denied me anything. Ki im osach b'asher atishto. But you are his wife. That's crossing a line. And this is the key point. He says, v'eich e'eseh hara'ah hagdol hazeh. How can I do this great evil V'chatosi leilokim. He doesn't say in sin against my master. What does he do? Sin against my God. Sin against my God. And this is really the key to Joseph. Because Joseph represents, at this point in Jewish history, a different era in Jewish history. You see, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob all had an advantage which Joseph didn't have, which was what? God spoke to them. God spoke to Abraham, God spoke to Isaac, God spoke to Jacob. God did not speak to Joseph. He's silent. Joseph has dreams, and he's got to work out what the dreams mean. But at no point does God say to Joseph, I am with you, I will help you. No. Okay? When he's in these moments of crisis, he's the one that has to reach out to God in the face of a silence that his father's never had. God spoke to them, not speaking to him. So if you just look at the top of the page, verse 2, it says, Vayhi Hashem es Yosef. God was with Joseph. In other words, whenever Joseph became successful, it wasn't just that God was throwing favoritism at him. Joseph was in positions where it would have been very easy to have exploited that position. So, for instance, when he's put in charge of Potiphar's, all of what Potiphar has, and Potiphar trusts him to such an extent that if he wanted to schmuchel a little, just, you know, his little gold cup, and he's not going to miss it, right? But Joseph wouldn't do such a thing because he has a conscience. Joseph wouldn't do such a thing because he knows God is watching me. And we see this time and time again. So, for instance, if you just go to page 219, this is when Joseph is thrown in prison because of the lies that Potiphar's wife tells about him, that he did assault, of course he didn't. He's in prison, but again, in prison, as we've said, he becomes in charge of the other prisoners because he's so successful. And who comes to him? The butler and the baker. So if you pick up from verse 6 on page 219, so that's Posuk Vav on page 218, it says, Vayavo aleihem babakeh, they came to Joseph in the morning, Vayaro sam, he saw them, Vinam zafim, and behold, they were aggravated, they were upset, something was bothering them. He asked Pharaoh's courtiers who were with him in the ward of his master's house, because they were courtiers of Pharaoh, these two, you know. They'd once had prominent positions, as we know, the butler and the baker. And the fact they're so aggrieved, he wants to know, Madua Panechem Ra'im Hayam, why do your faces appear so down, so bad today, or downcast today? And they said to him, we dreamt a dream, but there is no interpreter for it. Now what does Joseph reply to them? Yosef. Joseph said to them, Halo leilokim pisronim. Don't interpretations belong to God? Meaning, only if God grants me that wisdom. And this is a pattern time and time again with Joseph. When Pharaoh has heard about this Jewish boy that can interpret dreams, what does he say? Oh, it belongs to God. If God allows it, I can do it. If God doesn't, he never takes the, what's the word? The
credit,
thank you. The credit, the ability as his. So the first thing, why does that make him a tzaddik? Because the tzaddik is the person who recognises what determines whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong. Am I following what God wants me to do? Particularly when there is all sorts of temptation. You can think of it in business, for instance, right? You know, when there's money about and it's possible to do a bit of tax avoidance or tax evasion or whatever it might be, and it may or may not be discovered, only someone with absolute integrity that some, you know, a morality that's bigger than me, I have to be held to. Particularly if no human being would know whether you did it or whether you didn't do it. So that's number one why that's the main. So it's not that Joseph was always put. In fact, that there was times he got a bit too preoccupied with himself. He had to shake himself out of it. But hold on a second. It's not about me. It's about what God wants from me. But there were those times that he did get a little bit too big on his self-importance. But the very fact he recognised it, that's the point. He recognised it. Okay. So even when he'd obviously, whilst of course, we are in no way letting Potiphar's wife off the hook, but the fact that he was looking so available and so handsome with this woman in the house was not exactly a sensible thing to do. And once he'd got himself in that situation, the real question is, can I get myself out of it? Right? Or the way the sages put it, and King Solomon talks about it, is the tzaddik is who falls down and has to know how to pick themselves up again. That's what, thank God, that's what tzaddik is, right? That it's not that you're perfect, it's that when you've messed up, how can you get back to where you're supposed to be? And particularly when temptation is concerned, or money is concerned, or aggrandizement is concerned, or credit is concerned, that other people, you know, will say, oh, look at what so-and-so said. Excuse me, it was me, Governor, I did it, right? It's very hard sometimes when to know, well, at least God knows that I did the right thing. Yeah, but Yenham got all the credit for it. I was the one who did it. He's got the MBE, and I'm the one that did all the work. Right? It's not easy sometimes, because we human beings, we like a little bit of acknowledgement. Of course we do. So the thing about Joseph is, even when he's in the most down and out situations, where nobody's taking any notice, okay, he's able to build himself up. The problem is that once you build yourself up, you may then be surrounded by the sycophants, or the people that take an interest, or the people that can lead you down a certain path. And are you still going to remember the values that make you a tzaddik? Not that you want to be called tzaddik. I mean, that tell you, I can do the right thing here. So what does this tell you? This tells you that tzaddikim need a brocha. It's precisely because they're fallible like you and me. You know? So if you're Keir Starmer, I'm not saying whether I politically agree with him or I don't agree with him, whether I think he's right, whether I think he's wrong, but there's no question that when somebody gets to that level, there's a real danger that they can, you know, all that ideology that got them into it in the first place, is that still what's going? It's not for me to say, you know, right? But we understand the danger. Tzaddik, and we're talking about leaders here, right? We need leaders who we can feel are genuine. We need leaders who we can feel stick to their code, even if there's a Potiphar's wife out to bring you down, right? You know? And precisely because you might have a little bit of a preoccupation with, I'm Joseph, right? I mean, I've got abilities, right? And the moment you recognise, oh, hold on a minute, I've got to bring myself back down to earth here. And that's not easy. It needs a brocha, right? Oh, gosh, that hasn't affected the recording. Somebody's trying to ring me. I hope that doesn't mean that the recording's in any way affected. No, we're still going. Good, fine. Now, so that's number one. Tzaddikim have the same battles to fight, sometimes greater battles, precisely because of what's at stake with the level of responsibility they have. Okay? There's another aspect to being a tzaddik, often, precisely because they're in that situation. And you actually also see it with Joseph. So, and this explains, actually, it's another take on the famous question, which I think we looked at in one of our other shiurim, about how come he never tried to get a message home to his dad to say, Dad, I'm all right, I'm alive. Did we ever touch on that? Mm-hmm. I think we did. I don't know whether we touched on it with this particular area, but we're now going to look at chapter 43. Where are we? Chapter 43. Verse 32, so that's on page 245. You go to page 245.
So can I just answer, Rabbi?
You can.
A silly question. Do we ever learn what the name of Potiphar's wife was? Do we ever, she's just known as Potiphar's wife.
I think there is a midrash, I can't remember her name. But the reason why the Torah obviously keeps saying the wife of Potiphar is precisely because of the sin involved. If he would have obviously succumbed to what she wanted to do, etc., and the fact that she's Mrs. Potiphar. But I'm trying to remember. There is a midrash, and I can't remember her name, but I'll try and look it up for next time. Yeah.
Curiosity.
Yeah. Say again.
Was she the one and only, or the many?
Well, that's also an interesting question, because, of course, in those days it was quite normal, particularly in those circles. But the fact that she, the Medrash does say that she was the favourite, right? She was the one that, I mean, obviously it would have been wrong regardless, but and the fact that she was, if you see a similar thing with Achashverosh, and whereby one of the reasons why Esther is taking such a risk by going to see him is because only if the king summoned, if the master, the husband summoned, was the wife allowed, you know, the great blessing of being with him, kind of thing. And the very fact that he'd not summoned her for 30 days in the Purim story, the idea, so that's not as if he's kind of spent time with her and therefore, you know, she feels, oh, he's close to me at the moment, maybe I can schmooze him. There's every indication that there's distance there. Yeah? But the point here is the fact that she's the one in the house at the time. So she's flavour of the month. And because she's flavour of the month, that's why it's even more risky. Yeah? Okay. So now we're going to come to another aspect of being a tzaddik, which can often be the case, particularly if somebody's in a position of leadership, where this is where we pick up the story here where, after obviously Joseph has interpreted the dreams, and Pharaoh makes him viceroy, and then there's the famine throughout the entire region. By the way, another reason he's called Yosef HaTzadik is because at that time the Egyptian empire was the empire of the world, the known world, okay? So in effect, if you are then in charge of making sure there's food distribution, you are literally saving the world, okay? So that's another idea. And of course, from far and wide, they're all coming to Egypt to get food, including Joseph's brothers from Canaan, and of course they come before the viceroy. And if you remember, at first he accuses them of being spies, and they've got to bring Benjamin, etc. When they do bring Benjamin the second time, they have a meal together, and it's very telling what happens at this meal. So we're looking from verse 32, Posuk Lamed Beis. So it says like this. Everybody got it, page 244, yeah? Vayasimu lo levado v'lahem levadom. They, meaning the Egyptian servants who are serving the meal. We're told, vayasimu lo levado, they served him, meaning Joseph. Levado means on his own, separately. V'lahem levadom. And them separately. Who were they? V'lamitzrim ha'ochlim ito levadam. The Egyptians who ate with him separately. Ki lo yochlun ha'mitzrim lechol es ha'ivrim lechem. For the Egyptians could not bear to eat bread with the Hebrews. Ki so'ev ahi l'mitzrayim. It being an abomination. He translates here loathsome. A to'ev is an abomination to the Egyptians. You hear this? When Joseph was appointed by Pharaoh to be viceroy, there were a lot of jaws that dropped. First of all, who's this pipsqueak Hebrew that's been brought out of prison and all of a sudden he's number two in charge of Egypt? There are a lot of people who are not very happy in Pharaoh's court. And he's a Jew, to make things worse. We don't like Jews. We don't like Hebrews. It's only his only protection are those assigned directly to him, the sort of inner circle, which even they are served separately. Because they're eating with Joseph. So Joseph is served separately. And then those who eat with him, and only by virtue of the fact they're allowed to be with him because they're Joseph's immediate attendants, served separately. What does that tell you? That for all this he made good, he's very lonely. And this explains why. How is he going to get a message to Dad? Who can he trust? He can't trust anybody. So whatever reasons we gave last time, but we talked about the whole idea that he thought he was dead to his father because his father never tried to find him because he didn't know his father had been lied to. I think that's what we said last time. But there's another answer here. He can't just go, I'm just back to Cain. No, you're not. Everything he does, wherever he goes, he's under scrutiny. He's trapped. And yet he's got this tremendous responsibility looking after everybody's food. So the first thing about Sadikim is that they have temptations just like you, and if possibly greater ones, because when you're at that level, there'll be all sorts of opportunities for you to exploit, and you've got to stick to your moral code and say to God, I'm undone. No matter what else success I've got in this life, I've got to answer to you. And often that's a very lonely place to be, particularly if there's jealousy, that you've got your critics, you've got those who isolate you, and you've still got to do what's right. Okay? And of course, the key to this, I'm going to build it up and make an idea, is that what we're saying is that not just in the Jewish community, but in the world, we all need people to lead us. We need people to take care of us. We need good governance. Yeah, we need to make sure, like for instance, what happened with us over Pesach, we had a power cut, okay? Jackie knows all about that at the moment, yeah? We had a power cut. It wasn't because I overloaded the system. There was a problem, and you need to, who can I contact? Who will sort that? I don't, you know, I mean, my wife, bless her, I keep saying that, I'll be in trouble. But she was so intrigued, she went off into the night with a little candle, like Wee Willie Wink, and I thought, well, what's she planning to do? I think she was just trying to find out how many of the houses kind of thing, you know. This wasn't one of these husbandly things where, don't worry, darling, I know what to do. And very much, it was Yom Tov as well, you know. Luckily, somebody next door, when they got up for work and everything was off. But the point I'm making is, there's people we need to trust. And the reason why I'm telling you this one is because, God bless them, even after the electricity came on, Jackie, make sure they stayed for right into that. I think because they wanted to make sure it was safe, right? So you need to make sure that there are people have got jobs, in very important jobs. I don't know what that job is. I just know that we take it for granted. You flick your switch, you want it, then you just hope. There's a whole network going. And, you know, it's funny. Somebody said to me, I won't say who, and I won't say, you don't need to comment. They smiled and said, well, Rabbi, you should have known. Your predecessors, every so often there was something about that house and they'd been going to the exam. So, oh, thanks, now you tell me that I'm the rabbi. But anyway, the point I make is there's people we need to trust in authority. Right, and I need to know that when they did that job, they didn't do there's the doing it properly, which will take 4 hours, and there's the it'll be all right if I did it in two. Because you're talking about electricity and gas and, sorry, Jackie, I don't mean to worry, right, you know? No, because yours is off at the moment, isn't it? They'll sort it, don't worry. Right. But the point I'm making is, and this is it, so we trust people in authority. We need people to do things for us that we can't do for ourselves. And the higher they are, the more we need to trust them. And it may very well be that the higher they are, as we've seen, there's all sorts of other temptations, and we just hope they're doing what a tzaddik would do. And so now we see how he learned this from Joseph. If there's anybody who could have handled this all very differently, and we wouldn't be here today if he handled it differently, if it did go, and precisely because he was vain. But when it came to the greater good, he wasn't vain. He might have been vain with his curls about him, but when it came to what the people needed, he had to make good. Hence the rabbis are talking about him as the tzaddik. Category number two, I appreciate you better pick up, that's only category number one, but we end it with a bracha about the righteous, so the right, that's really the starting point in all of this. Category number two, Hakasidim, that's also talking about Joseph, but this time in a very different context. So we're going to go to page 269. So page 269 begins with Jacob is aware that his time on this earth will soon be coming to an end. And he therefore needs to make a very important, it's more than a request. He makes his son take an oath to do the following. So we're on page 268, a beginning of Parashas Vayechi, which is Genesis chapter 47. So it says, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. Jacob lived in the land of Egypt, Shiva Esrei Shana, for 17 years. And the years of his life were 147. And the time approached for Israel to die. So he calls for his son, Yosef. He called for his son, for Joseph. And he said to him, please, if I found favor in your eyes, please place your hand under my thigh, and do for me an act of chesed ve'emes. Chesed means loving kindness, ve'emes in truth. Does anybody know where we apply this expression of a chesed shelemes, or something that's a chesed ve'emes? Do you mean? Very good, right? It's all to do with what we do for the dead who can't pay us back. This is where we get it from. This is where we get it from. Because it's to do with, I need you to do X for me because I'm about to die. And of course, once the person's left this world, they can't pay you back, right? But the obvious question here is, hold on a minute. This is Jacob the patriarch asking his son, what's this business of Simna yadcha tachas yirechi? Please place your hand under my thigh. What's that all about? And more than that, why does he say that you've got to swear to me to do this? This is how the text continues. It says, imadi chesed v'emes, that do for me this act of kindness and truth for me. Al nasik b'rein b'mitzrayim. Do not bury me in Egypt. V'shachavti im avosai, for I will lie down with my fathers. Unasosanim b'mitzrayim. And you shall transport me out of Egypt, ukvar tani b'kvarosam, and bury me in their tomb. And even though Joseph says, Vayomar, Anochi Esechi Varecha, I personally will do as you've said. What does Jacob say? That's not enough for Jacob. Well, you think your own son, Joseph. And bear in mind, Joseph and Jacob had a very, 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 very close relationship. They were intertwined with one another. Yeah. Yet notwithstanding, even though Joseph says, yes, I'll do it, Jacob says, no, Vayomar, he shovali, swear to me. Vayishovali, he swore to him. And Israel prostrates himself towards the head of the bed. Meaning that as a result of that, Israel prostrates himself. Even though he's the patriarch, yes, we know that Joseph is the viceroy, but he musters up his strength to bow to his son. What is going on here? First of all, doesn't he trust Joseph? And how does this explain being a chassid? So we've already explained, a tzaddik does what's right, even when there's all sorts of temptations that might prevent you from doing that, even though you don't mean there to be, and you've got to overcome them. And it might mean that you're alone, and everybody's criticising you, and everybody's out to get something from you, and you've still got to be true to your code. And you'd think that's very high level. But the normal translation of a chassid is those who go beyond the letter of the law. So you're not just doing what's right, despite all the challenges. You go beyond that, right? So why was it so important? The answer is very simple. We've already shown that as powerful as Joseph was, there were actually limits to his power. And the Egyptian, he was already in a very precarious situation as far as the Egyptians are concerned. How do you think it's going to go down if he goes to Pharaoh and says, listen, Pharaoh, you've got this great land of Egypt here, but it's not good enough for my dad. My dad is not going to stomach being buried here. So can I bury him in Canaan? The answer would have been a big fat no. And it would have been even worse precisely because you're the viceroy of Egypt. Right? So you think he's got unlimited power and what have you. And at the end of the day, he's number two to Pharaoh. Sorting out the food distribution is one thing. Basically saying, this land ain't good enough for my dad is not going to go down well with the king of Egypt. That is why Jacob says to his son, I know it's not one of these, you know, imagine when somebody comes to you and it's not about doing wrong. Tzaddik was about there's right and there's wrong, right? And even if there's all sorts of temptations, and even if nobody will know if he didn't know, I've got to do it. This is going beyond this, right? This is going to go beyond what you have to do, okay? And it may very well be that what is being asked is just too difficult. I just can't do it. I would do it. If I could, I would, right? But I can't because there are too many factors preventing me. I might be viceroy in Egypt, but there's no way Pharaoh's going to say, of course our land's not good enough for your dad. There's no way on God's earth. He says, swear to me. Swear to me. Which means somehow Joseph's got to make this happen. He doesn't know how he's going to make it happen. Right. His dad gives him a bit of a hand. What you need to say is, not this land isn't good enough, but he wants to be buried with his fathers. It's not a slight on you, Pharaoh. No, he wants to be buried. Now, when they go and bury Jacob, this whole entourage that you think, oh, it's because they're paying respects. No, they're all doing this to make sure Joseph comes back again. Joseph has to watch his P's and Q's very, very carefully. That the only reason he is leaving the land as the second in command is because his father wishes to be with his fathers. And then, because Joseph himself also doesn't want to be buried in Egypt either. How do you get out of that one? That, he makes his children swear that somehow, when the time comes, bear in mind, Joseph does end up being buried in Egypt, and I spoke about it in Shul on over Yom Tov, that Moses has to find out whereabouts in Egypt, and right? So here is a situation where, if you are a chosid, you'll go beyond the letter of the law to do something which is a chesed shalemes, right? Meaning that it's difficult, it's challenging, there's no reward. And it may even actually be detrimental to you. It might actually be something that is very difficult to do. And were it not for the fact that you've committed yourself through this oath, you might say, look, I did my best. Dad, I did my, what can I do? I went to Pharaoh, he said no. He makes him swear, and I'm sure you euphemistically, he's got to swear over something holy, and the holy thing for him to swear is his bris. Because that mitzvah was done wrong, right? So that's what the euphemistic put your hand, right? In other words, when you're bound to do, you know, sometimes brothers in arms, all sorts of incredible, somebody promises to do something for somebody, right? And even if they didn't do it, it'd be wrong to say they did wrong. They tried their best, they couldn't. No. Joseph had to find a way to go above and beyond to honour his father's wish. And the very fact the father made him swear will then make Pharaoh, if his father made him swear, then somehow, you know, as long as it's nothing that looks like a slight on Egypt. So the slant was put on it. Nothing to do with slant on Egypt. He wants to be buried in his ancestral home. That's what a chosid does. You go above and beyond and you find a way somehow. If it needs doing, you know. And you know what? The people on the chevron, you know, somebody can be in the middle of the busiest of days. And busy at work. And phone call comes. Tahara at 3:00, can you do it? Right? And it's not always easy. Those who are on a chevron know it's not always. It's not easy to do it anyway. How much more so when you right? But I'm on the chevron. For this, I've got to find a way. However hard it is, I've got to find. And we need people like that in the community. We need people who don't just do what's right, but they go above and beyond. That's the bracha that Chassidim need. Okay. Then Ve'al Ziknei Amcha Beis Yisrael. We will get the five done before we finish. Let me try and finish not too late. So now the elders. Now the elders is a very interesting one. Okay. For that, we're going to go to Parshas Bahalosecha. And there may be echoes in what we're about to learn. For those who've been involved with shul boards, I'm just saying, I'm not saying it applies to them. Maybe, okay? So you have a situation in Parshas Bahalosecha. It's quite far. Okay. Where everything should be ready for the Jewish people to go to the Promised Land. Everything's ready, right? We've had the first Pesach a year after the original coming out of Egypt. The Jewish people have learned what the different commands mean of trumpets, where you've got to move and you've got to stop, and right? You had Pesach Sheni, everything's ready, and then everything goes pear-shaped. The Jewish people are complaining, this and that and the other, and no matter what Moses does, it's not good enough. Okay? And his reaction to this, they're not happy with their food, they're just not happy with in general. Whatever Moses does is not good enough. So we're going to pick up page 789, so we're all using the same chumash, it's a lot easier. Page 789, this is Bamidbar chapter 11, verse 11. 11:11, that's an easy, okay? Page 789 or 788 in the Hebrew, Pasuk Yud Aleph. So we've got the people complaining about anything and everything, they're complaining about food, and Moses says, God, I'm done, that's it, take me now, can't handle it anymore, okay? So if you looked, it's last pasuk on the page, actually, of the large writing, Moses' despair, it says at the left there, page 789. In the Hebrew, it says as follows. Vayomer Moshe, pasuk yud, Vayomer Moshe el Hashem. Moshe said to Hashem, Lama harios le'avdecha? Why have you done such bad to your servant? V'lama lo matzasi chein be'enecha? Why have I not found favor in your eyes? Lasum es massa kolam hazeh alai. To place the burden of the entire people upon me. He'anachi horisi? Did I conceive this ace kolam hazeh, this entire people? In other words, am I their parent? Meaning you are God. I didn't conceive them. He'anachi yiladiti hu? Did I give birth to it? Ki sama elai sa'eha v'chakecha, that you say to me, carry them in your bosom. Kasha yisa ha'omen es hayonek, as a nurse carries a suckling. to the land that you swore to its forefathers. Now, what's interesting about that is actually, he's saying, am I supposed to treat them? You know, it's one thing to lead them, but I'm not their parent. And the sort of subtle subtext is actually God saying, actually, yes, you are. You might not think you've got to go that far. Because what's the parent will answer the call of the baby cry at 4 o'clock in the morning. Right? And will go to lengths that you wouldn't do in any other situation but for the fact that it's your child. That's what we do. And he's saying, well, I'm supposed to be on that level? And God doesn't say, no, you're not. He's, well, yeah, welcome to what leadership can sometimes be. You know, anyway. But the point is, he's saying at the moment the griping about the food's not good enough. I mean, I'm sure none of you have ever made a Jewish do where people have complained about the food, even though you went to all this hard work. Just saying. Right. May iron leave Osa. Where am I going to get them the meat? To feed the entire people. And this is the key line of verse 14. Apostle Yudad, Lo uchal anochi levi. I alone cannot carry this entire nation. It's too much for one person. And if I'm going to have to carry on all this responsibility on me, look at verse 15, Pasuk Tesvav. He says, V'im kocha at oseli. And if this is what's expected of me, and this is how you continue to deal with me, listen to what he says. Harugeni na harog. Kill me now. Just kill me now. If I found favour in your eyes, I can't carry on like this. Kill me now. And let me not see any more bad from this situation. What is God's answer? God's answer is as follows. Hashem said to Moshe, Esfali shivim ish. Gather to me 70 people, mizikne, our word mizikne, from the elders of Israel. He's saying, okay, there's help out there, Moses. There are talented people in the community who can share this responsibility with you. Right? Very talented people. I'm conscious of the time, so we're just going to zip ahead to the death of Miriam, which is actually Parashas Chukas. And if we go to Parashas Chukas, page 843. Are we doing for time? Yeah, we're doing all right. 6 minutes to go. I think I can do it. Yeah. Yeah. 6 minutes to go. So we're going to pick up the story where we have a jump of 38 years. All of a sudden, the Torah just kind of jumps ahead 38 years. And what happens? We'll just go from the beginning of chapter 20 very, very quickly. On page 842 in the Hebrew, 843 in the English. Vavavnei Israel kol ha'edah midbat Zin b'chodesh ha'rishon. The children of Israel, Halisomis, arrived at the wilderness of Zin in the first month. Vayeshev ha'om b'kodesh. And the people settled in Kodesh. What happened there? Vatomas shom Miriam. Miriam died there. Vatikoveh shom, and she was buried there. And then there is a quarrel. Why? Because all of a sudden there's no water, as there'd been a well in the merit of Miriam that provided water, and now there's no water. And it says, there is no water for the people. And they quarreled, the people complained, they gathered against Moses and Aaron. The obvious question is, why are they doing that? I thought there was now a shared body of 70 elders looking after the needs of the Jewish people. So surely now there's the person in charge of water and food. The department, go to them, just like there's the people that's got to sort out our pipe underneath, right? You know, you can't expect Moses to do that, you know. Sadiq Khan isn't going to come and sort out your pipes. There's people below him that are supposed to do that, right? Okay, fine. How come all these years later they're still going to Moses? And the answer was because delegation was not one of his strong points. They still wanted him, right? Okay. And therefore, a collective responsibility was set up. But it wasn't working. Now, I'm not saying this is the case in Pinner. But sometimes you can have a collective But some people on that collective aren't necessarily very good at sharing the responsibility. I'm not saying it happens here, but it can happen, right? And therefore, you need a particular brocha that people who've got a collective responsibility kind of know what their role is. And it doesn't matter who does X as long as it gets done and there's enough people to do it. But if somebody says, that, don't you touch that, that's my role, right? No. Yeah, but you didn't do it. I was too busy. Okay, but X needed sorting out. Excuse me, do you want to come and do it? I'm not saying this happens in Pinner. It doesn't happen in Pinner. But collective, there's a brocha. That's, you know what I mean? This is like the terrible joke about, you know, when there was that terrible antis of the prodigals of the elders of Zion. You've had this terrible, that suggests that Jews are running the world. To which somebody says, have they ever been to a meeting of the late, not in Pinner, of you know, a shul council, you know? The point is, our shul council is wonderful, it's brilliant, it's lovely, fantastic. But there is a challenge to communal leadership and how people, precisely because they've got a lot to give, how you make it work. It needs its own brocha, right? So yes, you've got your leaders. And yes, you've got those who go above and beyond. And then you've got the clan. But it all needs its own brocha because there's a lot of tensions and there's a lot of responsibilities, and how that whole thing hangs together needs those people who we depend on to make it work. So really, the clue is, you think you're blessing these five people. The key is, and I'll just very quickly do the last two because I know time's going on. So when it says, V'al pleitos sovereign, the remnant, who does that refer to? It can mean to lots of things. Lord Sacks go with the idea that we ourselves are a remnant of the people that we've lost. Look at how many we lost in the Holocaust. I spoke in the run-up to Pesach about the 80% that never came out of Egypt. There was who the Jewish people could have been, and we, the survivors, are the ones, the remnant, that have got to make sure that we're, as I spoke about last day Yom Tov, we're the ones that are still here to do what those who are no longer here to do, to take the Jewish mission forward. Others say, no, remnant means children, because obviously children are that kind of... that they are what's left of one generation, the remnant, needs to pass on to a new generation. Whatever we've still got left of this Jewish project, they are the future, and therefore that's why we speak about the remnant, meaning what's left of a generation, needs to pass on to the next generation to make sure that we can still keep going. There are times in Jewish history where people forgot a lot of laws and there was persecution, and that's why the Talmud, in effect, had to be written down. It was supposed to be an oral law. Why was it written down? Because through the terrible persecutions of the Romans, had we not set it down, we'd have lost it. Not everybody was educated enough to carry on. So therefore, those who are carrying the torch of what's left from previous generations to other generations needs a certain brocha. And finally, Val Gerat Tzedek, converts. And this was actually, they were put in by Gamaliel the Elder at a time where persecution against Jews from the Romans was horrendous. The Hadrianic persecutions, you cannot imagine. And yet people were joining Jews at a time where things were very difficult. I must just tell you in parenthesis, just like at the moment, there are lots of people making aliyah, even though it's, you know, we're not going through the best of times in the land of Israel. And I get from time to time non-Jewish people contacting me, I want to become Jewish. Right? And I'm supposed to say to them, not to put, people think you're supposed to put them off. It's not that. You're supposed to say, you do realise that sometimes we're not always flavour of the month, we Jews. Yeah? And it comes back to where we started with the tzaddik. The tzaddik will do what's right, even if it's not popular. Okay? And therefore, converts do deserve a particular brocha. Because sometimes, dare I say it, there's more of a fervour in them. Those who are Jews take it for granted. Right? And then it does say, V'aleinu and us. So it's not just, what we're saying is, within our makeup as the Jewish people, we need these five categories so that we all benefit. We need the machers, and we need the people to do what's right, even when there's all sorts of temptations not to do what's right. We need the people to go above and beyond. We need the people that will be part of a shared group where there might be some pretty forceful personalities and it might get pretty difficult. But you know what? We Jews have always had to rely on volunteers, and we've always had to rely on people who want to do good in the community. Even if sometimes we're not the easiest of people to deal with, you might have noticed this, right? They all need a particular brocha. Yeah? And what do we say about all of these people that need this brocha? Yeah, Merachamecha Hashem Lakenu. How are we doing for time? How many 1 minute over? That's not so bad. Yeah? So we say, may God grant your compassion on such people. Right? Yeah? V'sein sachar tov lebotkem shimcha ba'emes. And grant a good reward to all those who sincerely trust in your name. In other words, they do, whether that reward is just a bit of appreciation or that reward is just seeing the project that they were working on so that they actually see it come to fruition. V'simchel keina imahem lilam, and set our lot with them, because we might not be the ones doing it, but they're doing it for us, and let us all benefit. Let our lot, let our dependence on what they do be such. That we never be ashamed. You know, sometimes people might say, oh, well, I'm not worthy to be on that. I'm not worthy. No. Excuse me, we need you, right? And this idea of that we isn't time to go into it now, but lots of examples in our davening, we speak about there's never been like, so for instance, like in benching, we say, there's never been so ashamed that we don't apply ourselves to earning a living and we have to rely on other people to provide us with a living. No, you know, we've all got something to contribute. Never say, I'm not worthy, I'm not, you know, I'm not good. No. we've all got things to contribute, okay? And God will help you. That's why we say, we trust that you'll give us the help and you'll give us the divine assistance, like when Joseph needed it and when Moses needed it, right? We're also, if we open ourselves up to it, God will help us. Baruch atah Hashem mishanim iftach latzadikim. Blessed are you, O Lord, who is the support and trust of the righteous. Now that last bit, the rabbis say, just very, very briefly, just I know we're a few minutes over, but he's talking about Jacob. And the particular point where he's talking about Jacob is in Parashas Vayigash, where when Jacob finds out that Joseph is alive and that the family is going to be reunited. But where is the family going to be reunited? In Egypt. Which means, in order for the family all to be together, Jacob has got to go down to Egypt. If you just very briefly look at page 257, so we've gone over a little bit, only 3 minutes over, that's not bad for me. Yeah, okay. So chapter 46, page 256, 257. This is Genesis chapter 46. Says the following, so Israel set out with all he had to Beersheba. So before he goes to Egypt, leaving the family home, he goes to Beersheba. That's kind of the last stop before you're going south and out of the land, yeah? What does he do? He slaughtered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Why does it specify Isaac? The answer is Isaac never left the land of Israel. The idea was, there's a promise that this land will be yours, and therefore the best way to make sure it stays yours is you stay there, you don't leave. Not only is Jacob worried about leaving for that reason, he's worried for another reason. So the second base says, Vayoma Elohim Yisrael, God said to Israel, Bamaro Salal, in night visions. What's the importance about this? A night is the concept of uncertainty, darkness. What's going to be? Exile is the motif for exile is darkness. In other words, Jacob is having night, what do you call them? Night tremors? Yeah? Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov. And he said, Jacob, Jacob. Vayomer, and then he says, here I am. Vayomer, and God says to him, Anochi Hakel Elohei Avicha, I am the God of your father. Al tira, don't be frightened, Meridam Mitzrayim, ki legoi gadol asim chalam, for I will establish you as a great nation there. I'm coming with you. Why is this so important? Because here is Jacob, who knows that from his children will come this great nation, and yet something's been shared with him. You know what will be the dark period? Egypt. Egypt will be a terrible dark period, and I, as the patriarch, am about to go down to Egypt. And I have it on my conscience that I do not want to be the stepping stone for the next generation. Because I as the patriarch, could have said, I know Joseph, maybe. I've got to stay here. The family needs to stay here. I'd love to be reunited with Joseph. I know he can't leave Egypt. But there are bigger things at play here. And God's saying, actually, no, the destiny is you're going to have to go down to Egypt. And on his conscience, but look what's going to happen to our descendants in Egypt. I know what's going to happen. God says, don't worry. I will stay with you. You're doing what's right. Even though doing what's right appears to be extremely challenging and you're feeling the guilt of all the terrible things that will happen because you're going down to Egypt, you're doing what I need you to do as the head of the family, even though the future will be challenging. And therefore, God's promise that by doing what is right and I am with you will hopefully ease the pain of those difficult decisions that future generations will be affected by those decisions. And that's why it ends that God is the one that is the mainstay with the righteous. Mishan or Miftach, they have to trust in God, and God will reassure them that you're doing what you have to do. Because being in that position of authority and of righteousness is sometimes an extremely difficult thing to have to do. You know, you think of, you know, troops that have to be committed by a prime minister to keep, you know, Second World War, you know, they don't want to have to do it. They don't want to put people's lives at risk. And we hope that the likes of Donald Trump and the likes of today's leaders are also thinking about that, where people are sent into very difficult situations, hopefully for a better future for us. Or let's hope, please God, that they are being guided. That's why we say, don't we, on a Shabbos morning, may God put the wisdom and understanding into our leaders. Let's hope they know what they're doing, please God, and that they're doing what's right. They need a bracha. So that's why those in positions of authority and leadership and all these groups within that need a special bracha, and that's the bracha that's in the Amida. So we've gone over by 7 minutes. I don't think that's so terrible. I hope it was worth it. And hope that was, you found that interesting and understand the nature of that particular bracha. So be continued next week, please God. Thank you for those listening on the recording. All the very best.